The Farm in the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com. Welcome to Farm in the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. On this edition of our show, we talk about rural America and its future. The perception is that small rural towns are shrinking, and in many cases, that is true. However, research shows that towns can be very successful whether they are growing or shrinking. Learn what one multi-year study says are the most important things small towns must do in order to survive and thrive. It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, brought to you by Pivot BioProven. It's time to rethink nitrogen. Pivot BioProven replaces nitrogen fertilizer with microbes that adhere to the crop's root system and apply nitrogen each day. 2019 performance report data shows Pivot BioProven consistently outperforms synthetic nitrogen fertilizer year over year, providing corn growers improved yields and a more dependable nitrogen supply that isn't lost to the environment. To read the performance report, go to pivotbio.com. For more information on Pivot BioProven, just text PROVEN to 31313. As many of you know, I have an interest in helping rural America and small towns. I want to see agriculture remain strong, and I like to see great places for families to live and thrive in those rural areas. However, many places in rural America are declining in population, and with that comes the perception that these areas are not great places to make roots. Dave Peters is an associate professor of rural sociology at Iowa State University, and part of his work has been examining the way small towns succeed or fail over time. He calls it shrink smart small towns, and he chronicles communities that are doing well, even if they are losing population. We discussed what the multi-year research shows are the most important things local leaders and communities can do in order to make the most of what they have. Dave Peters joins me, and Dave is at Iowa State. Dave, we've been talking about small towns here, and certainly I think, you know, a lot of our listeners are from more rural areas, agricultural places, smaller towns. And a lot of your research you've done yourself and with your colleagues talks about how towns hopefully thrive. But, you know, sometimes we think about that a town has to be growing, and your research shows that you don't necessarily have to be growing. But if your population is even declining, you can still do that in a smart way. Why don't you kind of give a general overview of what you're talking about? I think you call it shrink smart small towns. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So in sort of the public consciousness, you know, all small towns are declining. They're losing people, they're losing jobs, you know, quality of life is eroding. And while that is definitely the case for, you know, many towns, it's not the case for all small towns. And what we found, surprisingly, that there were this group of towns that we call shrink smart towns that have had pretty steady declines in population over decades, yet their quality of life, which here in Iowa we've been tracking 99 small towns since the early 90s, that since the 90s, quality of life has increased. And so we were wondering, what's going on? What are these towns doing, despite shrinking, what are these towns doing that people are happy in their towns? And I'll talk in a minute about kind of the components of who's leaving and who's staying and who's coming into these towns, because that's an interesting thing. But overall, their populations are declining. So our project that was funded by the National Science Foundation went into these communities, and we did some interviews, we did some surveys, and really tried to get a handle on what these towns have done. Can it be replicated? And if it can, which we think it can to some degree, can we give other communities a set of strategies or a guide on how they can, you know, really begin to improve quality of life given the limited resources they might have?
You mentioned something there about trying to replicate things. Do you find that there are things that small towns have control over, or is there a certain percentage of things that are just simply done to us, so to speak, and we can't do as much about, or maybe we just don't realize the power we have to be able to influence our small town? What do you find?
Yeah, so we found in two of the smart shrinking towns, they had very large family-run employers. And so we didn't write those towns off, but we said, you know, not every town has a major. So one is Sioux Cup that does the grain bins. That's a shrink smart town. Well, not every community is going to have a major employer that serves almost every crop producing agricultural group in the country. And so that can't be replicated. So we focused on towns that didn't have any large employer or a large college or a large community college. So yeah, despite, you know, the economic forces, both national and global, that have hit rural communities, both in terms of agricultural trade and commodity prices, as well as, you know, global trade that has, you know, rural communities used to be where manufacturing went because of lower cost of land and lower cost of labor. And as that's moved overseas over the decades since the 80s, that's really hit rural communities. So, yeah, the deck is stacked in a lot of ways against small towns, which is driving, you know, loss of population. But in terms of what it's like to live in that town, in terms of the quality of life, that is something towns do have control over. Absolutely.
So talk about then some of those factors that they do have control over and how then they turn those factors into pluses for them.
Yep. So we've identified a couple key components, and they're not in any particular order. But the major one that seems to be the two major ones, I would say, well, I'll say three major ones. The list keeps growing as I talk. The first one is openness of leadership. That is critically important. And the town, the smart shrinking towns we interviewed in, and then the declining towns, we saw huge differences. In the smart shrinking towns, leaders, old established leaders, were willing to step back and let new residents, such as they were, and younger people take over the reins of leadership. I can't, you know, there was probably three or four instances when in these towns, three or four towns, where the older leaders said, you know, it's time for us to step back and just write the checks and let the younger people, younger kids sometimes they call them, come in and take charge of the community. In the declining towns, what you had are also strong leaders, but leaders that have been in place for sometimes 25, even 30 years. And so in these shrink smart towns, they were willing, the old established leadership was willing to let new ideas and new people come on in. And the second component is related to that, is that these shrink smart towns love to try new ideas, and failure is not stigmatized. So I grew up in a small town, and the town that I grew up in, you know, if you try to lead a project and it didn't work out, you know, there was sort of a black mark by your name. in these towns, you know, they're okay with failing. They're okay with ideas not working out. They just try something else. One guy that was the mayor that ran the grocery store in a town called Sac City, Iowa, said, well, we are open to any ideas. They said, some ideas work, some don't, and we're just going to keep throwing ideas out there till we hit it. And so because of that, odd ideas get discussed. For example, one town, they have this big popcorn ball, and they built a shelter around it. And so they have this plan, they've been developing this plan to bring tourism, because there's a bike trail nearby, to bring tourists in to see this popcorn ball. So the idea is that, you know, the general purpose is that any idea, any and all ideas that they think have legs will get talked about, and there's not any kind of stigma with proposing odd ideas or with failure. So, and those are things that communities have control over, this idea of openness of leadership and trying new ideas.
How do you think a community kind of develops that then? Is it just you have the leaders that are willing to say that and try new ideas, or do you find that some towns somehow adopt that mentality over time? Because as you mentioned, that can be hard to overcome in small towns, that, you know, if you try an idea and it fails, people remember that for a long time, and changing that stereotype can be hard to do.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. The two go hand in hand. You need to have people willing to be leaders, but also the community needs to be very supportive of their leaders. They have to make sure that they're supportive of their leaders and each other, that they themselves are willing to be open to new ideas, not stigmatizing failure, as I said before. But really, the other thing we find out in these towns as well is, you know, they have this confidence in their community. Even though they've been declining in population for a long time, they really believe in their town. They're strongly attached to their communities. They think their town has a lot going for it than other towns. And so, again, it's this general mentality in these communities that, you know, we're not going to knock ourselves down, that we get knocked down by the big cities in our state, we get knocked down by national business, we get knocked down by global trade. You know, we're not going to knock ourselves down. There seems to be, and we haven't quite pinpointed that, but we see in these towns, if we go back and we ask, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, a lot of times these towns weren't that way. That it's and we're trying to figure out why that is, but there came a point when a large number of people in the community realize that they need to start looking after themselves rather than having an employer come in and save the town or having the state or federal government or the ag market save their community. They decided that they needed to take matters into their own hands because no one was going to care about their town as much as they would. And so there's a lot of support for leadership, a lot of support for projects, and that manifests itself, or you see that in local giving. So, for example, one town of Elma, Iowa, has under 500 or under 600 people. It's like 550 or something. They have four community foundations with nearly $750,000 in assets. And it isn't all from big one-time donations. They do a drive every 3 to 4 years. And so you have the small town of Elma that people are willing to invest their money in the future of the town. And so when people begin to realize that they have to get together and bind with their fellow people in town to move the town forward, they're willing to give their time and their money and of course, you know, their support for projects to advance their town as much as they can.
You know, we think about towns and their success, of course, being dealing with the economy, and certainly people need jobs and they need to be able to make money. But the shrink smart towns, is their success necessarily tied to any one business or employer, or how have they been able to generate the economic success that you would think that a community needs?
Yeah, so two things on that. So one is that most of our shrink smart communities tended to have more employment in manufacturing. That didn't necessarily mean that the manufacturing jobs were local in town. Sometimes, you know, people had to commute maybe 15 to 20 minutes to those jobs. But there was a manufacturing base in the town or in and around the town. And what we think is this, you know, presence of manufacturing jobs that are full-time, full-year employment, they're skilled. They tend to pay better wages than other kinds of industries. We think that this is critically important to have this manufacturing base. And so a lot of the rhetoric you hear about bringing manufacturing back, I mean, there is, our project finds pretty clear evidence that bringing manufacturing jobs back to the United States, particularly if they can locate in rural areas, does, from our work and from the evidence that we've collected, will help rural vitality by providing these economically secure, good, quote-unquote, good jobs that have benefits in the community. We also see a very strong connection with agriculture in these communities. So the role of agriculture isn't what people think. The farming sector and the farmers in those communities, you know, they don't provide a lot of employment these days. You know, farms are very large, very mechanized, they don't need a lot of people. But what the farm community provides is connections outside the community through commodity organizations. And as I was saying before, a lot of times the most prominent people in these communities are farmers. They've been around a long time. Their families have been in town for a long time. So if you can get a large number of the farm community on board to support the project, they lend their influence to these projects, and of course, you know, they can help with connections and raising funds as well. But those would be the two components. Again, manufacturing for the jobs, the good jobs it provides, but also a strong farm sector, because when you have these farmers are connected with state and national groups, they can lend influence and credibility to any local projects. They're very influential.
I'm interested what you found as far as the educational opportunities in schools in those communities. Were there any things that set them apart as well? Because you hear in a lot of small towns that they want to have opportunities for young people, or at least know that they could come back home and have their own business and so forth. Any things that you found with schools and young people?
Not really with the schools in particular. The schools, generally did a good job. Most people in these shrink smart towns were happy with their schools. The biggest issue, which is a long going issue, is consolidation and just time that kids spend on the bus going to school. So that kind of took away time from family and from farm and other extracurricular activities from the kids. But what's interesting, as I mentioned before, is that even though in a lot of these towns the overall population is declining, what we see is in the younger demographics, particularly those 40 years and younger, there has been an increase in those people in these shrink smart towns. So it's sort of a shifting that you have a large number of older people, in their 50s and 60s and older, leaving the community for retirement. And so that drives the population down because most people in these small towns are older. But what you see in this younger demographic, that demographic's increasing. So even though these towns are declining, there's more young people and young families coming in, but that's such a small share of the overall population of the town. So you see this shifting. So in some of these towns, what we think is that actually, this population loss will begin to slow as more young people come in and become a larger part of the population base. And as older people, as they've said to say, but they pass on, either they pass on out of this earthly life, or they leave to retire or to be where their kids are, that we will see a slowing down in some of these shrink smart towns. And we think, and when we talk to young families that have moved in, many of them were from the local community or from that region, and they chose that they didn't want to live in a big suburb in a city, or they didn't want to live in a city. They wanted to live in a small town, and the quality of life in that small town, the good daycares, the good schools, the active social life, the knowing that people are committed to the town and there's interesting things happening, that all was a major factors in the decision to move to these small towns when they had opportunities elsewhere. So it wasn't really the schools by themselves, but you do see people willing to come back in these shrink smart towns, and they come back to a community that seems revitalized. I mean, I go into that community and you hear them talk and I want to move there. I mean, they have interesting things going on. They're excited about their community, and I think it really is infectious and really brings more people in. And gets younger families to move to the town or move back to that town.
Right. We want to talk about some specific towns that are shrink smart, but before we do that, we're not going to mention names on the ones that maybe have shrunk poorly, but give me an overview of, if you could pinpoint one or two things that the ones that have shrunk poorly, what would be the mistakes that we need to be aware of that in general those towns have where they've gotten it wrong?
So the one I'd already mentioned, just entrenched leadership that hasn't changed in decades. That's one. And the leadership that is the people that have always been in leadership roles in the community. So we see that all these towns have strong leaders. It's just the nature of that leadership. And so in these shrink poorly towns or the declining towns, the leadership hasn't changed. The leadership reflects only a small segment of the people in that town, usually the owners of prominent businesses or prominent families, and no other people have a voice. And so when decisions get made without any consultation from anyone else, no one wants to engage in the town. The other thing I mentioned before as well is, failure of ideas. People don't feel comfortable proposing new ideas. People feel that if they try to get a project started and get off the ground and it fails, that they'll lose a lot of face in the community. Those are characteristics of these declining towns. The other is there's really a lack of socializing in these declining towns. People go elsewhere to interact, and in these shrink smart towns, even though they're small, they make a lot of effort to have events in their town. In fact, there's this in Elma, Iowa. You can look at their Facebook page. You know, they have things going on all the time, and there's people in towns of 3,000 to 4,000 that come to Elma because Elma has things going on. And so, you know, this getting people to socialize outside of formal organizations is important. And kind of the last thing of a don't to do and a do in the shrink towns is that in a lot of the shrink poor communities, they focused on what I would say were typical economic development projects. And so if you talk to a consultant or a professional economic developer, they're going to give you the five or six things that every other town in the Midwest is doing. You know, recruit, build an industrial park, try to recruit, you know, a manufacturer, you know, try to get a Walmart or a big retail establishment, try to spend all this money to upgrade your downtown. And the track record of success on those things is pretty poor. It's you spend a lot of money and every other town is doing the same thing, and the success rate is pretty low. By contrast, in the shrink smart towns, these communities, instead of doing the traditional economic development projects, they've focused on things that are within their control and on projects that really make a difference in people's day-to-day lives. So investing in daycare centers, since most people, you know, jobs are few and far between in small towns, they have to commute. So they make sure that the daycare system is good. They make sure that the schools are good. They make sure there's fitness centers. They make sure there's recreational opportunities. They focus on, you know, good health care, getting a vibrant grocery store in town and keeping a pharmacy in town, having at least a clinic in town. So things that may not generate a lot of economic activity, but generate services that are important in people's day-to-day lives and really make these towns pretty high quality of life communities. So again, these shrink smart towns really focus on things that they can control, but things that make a difference in people's day-to-day lives. I mean, no one's going to give a lot of money to rehab a downtown that benefits downtown businesses, but people might be willing to give their money to invest in a daycare or to keeping a grocery store or to rehabbing an area where you can have a clinic because they're going to actually use those. They're going to derive more of a benefit from those services.
You've mentioned Elma several times. What are a couple of other success stories that you like to talk about, and what have they specifically done to help Shrink Smart?
So I mean, it's a lot of the same strategies, but Sac City up in you know, West Central Iowa, they're a county seat town, so they're a little bit bigger. They have about 1,900 people in town, and they have managed to hold on to their local hospital. And so the hospital is really a point of pride for that community. They become a regional hub for healthcare. And because they have a good quality of life, a lot of the professionals that work at that hospital tend to live in Sac City. So they've taken this, and, you know, Sac City is it's a county seat town, so they have some advantages, but they've played that hand pretty well, and making sure that they by having a good quality of life that they can keep those professionals in the community, and when they have jobs, people live in town. Yeah, so there are a number of communities. So Mediapolis in southeast Missouri, or southeast Iowa, I should say. You know, they've also done a pretty good job. You know, people are very attached. They managed to keep their agricultural jobs and their manufacturing jobs over time, which is really, really good. Again, that fits in with what I've been saying before, is maintaining the vitality of these traditional rural industries is important. And so Mediapolis has done a very good job at doing that. Allerton is an interesting one. Allerton has actually experienced a big drop in their manufacturing job base, and they've managed to, I wouldn't say necessarily replace all those jobs, but they've been able to restructure and replace those jobs with a large number of people employed in construction. So Allerton has also gone through this big shock of losing a few major manufacturing employers in their community, and over the last 10 years, they've been able to retool or rejigger their economy to more of a manufacturing-based economy. So there's been a proliferation of manufacturing jobs. And so that plays on kind of the existing skills that the manufacturing workforce had by transitioning that to construction, you know, that generally pays pretty good wages and there's a lot of demand for. So, you know, Allerton's the example of a town that has gone through this economic shock of losing their big manufacturing employers and has managed to, you know, to develop a lot of times through entrepreneurship, and a few large construction firms have relocated to that. To Allerton, have branches in Allerton, but they've been able to maintain quality of life by having this economic base in construction and the construction trades.
You know, we've mostly focused on those towns that are probably holding population or losing. You do have towns here that are grow smart towns. Those that are growing, do they tend to be in places where maybe they're closer to a metro area, so they're picking up people that are commuting, or are they doing something to actually attract population to their town?
Yeah, it's mainly a function of what you said. So in our you know, growing towns with growing quality of life, they're almost all near natural amenities. So lakes, rivers, you know, woodlands, hills, people are attracted to them because of their natural amenities. The second group are essentially what we call exurbs. Exurb, they're basically a rural bedroom community for larger metropolitan areas. And so that those two groups are probably contain most of the shrink or the growing towns with growing quality of life. We do find, interestingly, we have this community of Denison, Iowa, that is home to it's a large sized town, around 8,000 people, and they're home to a large Tyson pork processing facility. And we've been tracking this town again since through the early 90s, and we saw a big drop in quality of life, and then we saw rebound over time. So Denison is now probably 55% minority, and it's growing in quality of life and growing in population. And so we're you know, continuing to study what Denison has done as they, you know, are one of these large pork, you know, meatpacking towns that has a very large minority population. They've managed to integrate these new residents, mainly minority residents, in their community, and quality of life is beginning to rise again after falling. And so we think that is a success story, that they've managed to, you know, go through this rapid change in their economy and this big shift in their population, and are beginning to come out of it, you know, almost somewhat better than they were before. And that's, again, the employer is drawing people to the community. So, yeah, it's natural amenities. It's being in the orbit of some large metropolitan area, and the communities are bedroom communities. Or you've had a very large employer come into town, and people move in and stay in town because of the quality of life and the job together.
Dave, before we wind up, I find a lot of people are interested in these type of topics, especially, you know, if we live out in the countryside and in small towns. Yeah. Is there a way to be able to read more or learn more about not only your research, but what some of these towns that are doing this well, what they're doing and how we replicate that?
Yeah, you can go to our website, and that has a lot of good information, and a lot of our reports are up there. And I'll give you the easy website. It is www.soc.iastate.edu, and if you go and look under the extension, because I have an extension appointment, if you click under the extension tab, you'll see the Iowa Small Towns Project. And if you click on that, then you'll find all the reports that we have. You can look at the data for all the various towns and kind of explore which ones were improving in certain categories. We do have reports on best practices. So there's a lot of information there that people can learn, and we also have links to some extension publications. So we have our research reports that are long and maybe not as interesting to read, but we do come up with some 5-page extension bulletins that are sort of really how-tos on how to better create quality of life in your community. And so those would be good resources for people interested in exploring that. And of course, you can always give me a call or send me an email, and I'm more happy to talk specifics with people about how they can begin to develop the social infrastructure that really is the key to promoting quality of life in small towns.
As you just heard, you can find more information from Dave and his colleagues online, where they discuss these topics in depth. And remember, you can go to our website, TotalTownMakeover.com, where we have many radio, TV, and podcast stories on the topic of rural revitalization, stories that show what successful communities are doing well and how we can implement those ideas where we live. That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Get what you paid for, the nitrogen that stays put, whether or not. Learn more at pivotbio.com.